You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. I'm Art Ray. Today's guest is Michael J. Gelb. Michael Gelb is the world's leading authority on the application of genius thinking to personal and organizational development. He is a pioneer in the fields of creative thinking, accelerated learning, and innovative leadership. He brings more than 30 years of experience as a professional speaker, seminar leader, and organizational consultant to his diverse international clientele. He is the author of 12 books on creativity and innovation, including the international bestseller, How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci, 7 Steps to Genius Every Day, Innovate Like Edison, The 5-Step System for Breakthrough Business Success, co-authored with Sarah Miller Caldicott, the great-grandniece of Thomas Edison. Discover Your Genius, How to Think Like History's 10 Most Revolutionary Minds, and the recently released Brain Power, Improve Your Mind as You Age. He is a featured presenter at the Improve Your Mind, Body, and Soul at Any Age conference in Virginia Beach at the ARE from July 13th to the 15th. To learn more about this conference, go to edgarcayce.org, click on Events, and then click on Conferences. To learn more about Michael Gelb's work, visit michaelgelb.com. That's michaelgelb.com. Thank you for coming on the show today. I need to ask you, I'm going to start out with your latest book, Brain Power, Improve Your Mind as You Age. Could you tell us about that book?
Sure. The mind is something that doesn't come with a manual. So I've been writing books over the years to help people learn how to use it and improve it. And it's particularly important to focus on doing that as the years go by. I've been teaching this kind of work for over 30 years, and now it's getting really serious. I'm about to turn 60 myself, so I focused in especially on the issues that are most relevant to us as the years go by. How do we not only prevent dementia, Alzheimer's, but how do we actually improve as we get older? That's the focus of Brain Power, Improve Your Mind as You Age.
Maybe it's for people who are interested in staying sharp. I don't know. I know for me, I'm tempted whenever I retire just to stay at home and relax and watch TV maybe or play video games, but that's probably not too conducive to keeping one's mind sharp.
it's what's fascinating for a lot of people, they look forward to retirement, but then they die.
Oh, yes.
Shortly thereafter, unless they view retirement as an opportunity for a renaissance rather than actual retirement as we normally think about it. If you've been working hard for 30, 40 years, you probably want to give yourself, think of it as a sabbatical. Take 6 months and rest and relax and do nothing. But you better be cooking up some sort of project that engages you, that engages your mind, that engages your heart, your passion, your focus, because it turns out that having a sense of purpose is one of the predictors not only of greater longevity, but also of avoiding any kind of dementia. People with a focus, with a purpose, with a passion, tend to outlive those who just want to hang out.
Oh, yes. For someone who's retired, what are some ways that they can seek a purpose?
Great. Well, I think that's obviously the question. And if you don't have a sense of purpose, you can hold the question I'm about to share in mind, because it's tremendously powerful life-organizing question at any age, whether you've retired from the workplace or whether you've started work but you don't really have a sense of passion or purpose in what you're doing. So it's really relevant at any age. And the question is simple. It is, what is my purpose now? What is my purpose? You know, in other words, if you don't know what your purpose is, then your purpose is to to focus on that question. What is my purpose? And it can take many forms. You may decide it is to write your memoirs and share what you learned in the course of your career. It may be to volunteer and help and serve others. So they found one study that I read in researching the Brain Power book. They've known for years that when older people volunteer to help younger people to serve as mentors or guides, that it's tremendously valuable for the younger people. But it turns out, surprise, surprise, it's just as valuable for the older people. So your purpose can be sharing your wisdom, either directly by coaching and supporting others or by writing about it. It could be just to learn the things you've always wanted to learn, which turns out to also be one of the great things you can do to strengthen your mind as you get older. So challenging your brain by learning something new, the language you always wanted to learn but never got around to, learning to play the musical instrument you always wanted to play, even, believe it or not, learning how to juggle. And there's actual instructions in the book to teach people how to juggle, because it turns out that a bunch of German researchers discovered that adults who practice juggling for 15 minutes a day for 3 months show significant improvements in their brains. And what's fascinating about this is twofold. One, it validates something that, as a former professional juggler, I was delighted to discover, and that is that juggling is indeed one of the great things you can do to strengthen your brain. But even more importantly, this piece of research done at Regensburg University in Germany was one of the many pieces of research that helped to establish this new paradigm of neuroplasticity. In other words, we now know that the brain is actually designed to improve with use. And when all of us were growing up, we had a different paradigm. I made up a word for it. I call it the neurostatic paradigm. It was the idea that your brain power was fixed when you were 5 years old and that there was nothing that you could do about it. As a matter of fact, it was even worse than that, because the real paradigm that we grew up with is what I call the neuronecrotic paradigm. Necrotic, of course, meaning death. And it used to be believed that at age 30, you started to experience a failure of your brain to operate properly, that it was effectively dying every day for the rest of your life, and there was nothing you can do about it. And we now know that that's not true. Your brain can go on changing and developing and improving throughout life. So this new paradigm of neuro, brain cell, plasticity, changeable, flexible, adaptable, is the accepted wisdom of contemporary neuroscience. So the only question now is not whether you can improve your brain, but what's the best way. So coming back to our juggling experiment, and not only did they discover that juggling improves the brain, but what's really significant about it, this was one of the experiments that helped establish this new paradigm. And the way they were able to do it is simply because of advances in technology. In the 1950s, when the neurostatic and neuronecrotic paradigms were established, we didn't have a way of measuring what was happening in an adult brain when they tried something new like learning how to juggle. But thanks to the development of MRIs and brain scans, we can now look at the brain as an adult attempts to learn something and discover what's happening, and lo and behold, you can watch it making new connections and expanding its internal circuitry in a way that is tangible. I mean, so you can we can measure this process of brain improvement. So scientists have been studying, okay, what are the best ways? What are the best ways to generate that improvement? There was a famous study led by Professor Joe Verghese at Tufts University, published in the New England Journal of Medicine. People are probably familiar with it. It's where the notion of doing crossword puzzles got all all the attention. But actually, Verghese and his colleagues found that playing chess or bridge were among the strongest things that you can do to help prevent dementia. They also discovered that learning a new language, learning a musical instrument, crossword puzzles are good, but only if you keep challenging yourself with more difficult levels of crossword puzzles. And what I aim to do was sort of get underneath that research, because what if you don't feel like playing chess or bridge and you don't want to learn a new language? What can you do nonetheless? And it seems that all it really takes is 15 minutes a day of doing something challenging and different. So find something, learn new vocabulary words, learn how to juggle, learn how to dance, take tango lessons, study Tai Chi, go to a yoga class. Do something new, something you haven't done before, and you are awakening new connections in your brain and effectively improving your brain every day you do that.
We'll be right back with more with Michael Gelb on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Michael Gelb.
Now, you were a professional juggler. How did you go from that to writing so many books on the mind?
Well, you know, I started studying something called the Alexander Technique when I was in living in England many, many years ago. And I thought it was the most powerful method for developing self-knowledge, self-awareness, both for myself and for others. And those are lifelong passions of mine. That's my purpose, is to help others develop that deeper self-knowledge, self-awareness, self-understanding in a context of compassion and creativity. So I was clear about my purpose, and the Alexander Technique seemed to be a way to develop it. And part of what fascinated me about the Alexander work was it seemed to offer an approach to learning anything by understanding how to be free from unnecessary tension and habits of stress that seem to undermine performance in so many areas of life. So I thought this was such a core, important, underlying wisdom. I went to England. I trained for 3 years as an Alexander Technique teacher. And I'm a very practical person. I thought, you know, if this really works, if the theory really translates into practice, then I should be able to learn things that previously seemed difficult or impossible. And one of those things was juggling. So I used juggling as a means to test out the validity of the Alexander work that I was training in. And sure enough, it worked. I mean, I got really good. I was juggling 4 balls and 5 balls and flaming clubs and passing, you know, 6, 7, 8 balls with other jugglers. And it worked well enough that I was able to perform at children's parties and in nightclubs and on the street corner and even a couple times live on stage with Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones. And I actually started way back in 1975, I started teaching a juggling class at an adult evening college in London, using juggling as a metaphor for the process of learning about learning. And the class was very successful. And then I taught a friend of mine who happened to be an author and a renowned business consultant how to juggle, and I also gave him some lessons in the Alexander Technique. And he was leading a 5-day senior management seminar for a multinational computer firm in Switzerland, and he invited me to be a guest. So I went along, and I taught all these corporate vice presidents how to juggle. I gave them Alexander Technique lessons. And the head of human resources for this company said, we want this American guy on all of our future senior management programs. So in my late 20s, I was traveling the world, teaching people twice my age how to juggle. But also, you know, using it really as a metaphor for teaching them how to learn anything they wanted to as well as they possibly could. And then it didn't take me long to figure out how to apply that to helping people create a more learning-oriented creative culture in the workplace, which is a big part of what I've been doing ever since.
you learned juggling as an experiment to enhance your mind. Does continuing to practice what you've learned help you continue to enhance your mind, or do you have to work on other tasks or other skills?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'd say for me, it's both, because I think that juggling, I think there's something about the cross-lateral nature of juggling that is a really good tune-up for the mind and body. So I do it from time to time. But when I was, I don't know, about 35, I felt that I had achieved all my goals in juggling. I was able to do 5 balls, and I realized I could spend the rest of my life learning how to do 6 or 7, but it just, I really reached the pinnacle of what I had intended. And I wanted a new challenge. I intuited, this was before I was familiar with the research, but I just intuited that it would be better for me as someone who travels the world teaching other people how to learn and be more creative, that it'd be better for me to have the experience of starting something as a relative beginner. Because I just think it's important when you're teaching other people, especially at a high level, to really get into that beginner's mind by actually starting something new. So I started, I enrolled in something I'd always wanted to do, which was study the martial art of Aikido. And I went along and, you know, put on a white uniform and a white belt and didn't know where to put my feet and didn't understand the Japanese words and got a total experience of becoming a beginner. But then I applied what I learned about learning from my adventure of learning how to juggle and learning the Alexander technique. And I set a goal to get my black belt and then my 2nd and 3rd and 4th degree black belt, all of which I accomplished. And in the process, I had another opportunity to go from complete beginner to relative mastery in a mind-body discipline, which not only did I enjoy and find to be just incredibly enlivening and beautiful activity, but it also deeply enriched my abilities as a teacher, as a guide to others who are trying to take on new challenges and learn whatever they've always wanted to learn.
You've written a book on the Alexander technique called Body Learning. Now,
yes.
Could you tell us, what is the Alexander technique?
Sure. Well, I just have to tell you, too, that was a great learning experience, too, because that book was my master's thesis. And I really learned how to write by writing my master's thesis. And that's where I discovered some of the principles of creative thinking that I have gone on to write other books about. Because when I sat there trying to write this book, even though I was passionate about the Alexander technique, I hadn't really learned from my experience at university how to express myself. I was mostly doing what students do, which is taking the required reading from the textbooks I was assigned and effectively paraphrasing what was in there and joining it together with ands, therefores, and indeeds. And you know, I did well. I mean, I graduated in 3 years with honors with 2 majors, but I realized that I had just learned how to play this academic game, and I was interested in authentic knowledge. So I enrolled at Goddard College in Vermont, and they sponsored this really cool program where you could design your own master's degree. And I created a theme for my master's degree, which I called Psychophysical Reeducation, Reeducating the Mind and Body. And I was doing this while I was training as an Alexander Technique teacher, and I needed to write my thesis about the Alexander technique. So when I sat down to actually begin the thesis, I just looked at a blank piece of paper and I went, uh-oh. Fortunately, however, the consultant I was telling you about who had invited me to come to Switzerland and co-teach this course, the guy I taught how to juggle, he taught me mind mapping. It was Tony Buzan who invented mind mapping. And I made a mind map of my ideas about Jesus, and all of a sudden, my mind exploded with just amazing abundance of ideas and insights and connections on the topic. And I wrote my thesis out longhand, that's how long ago this is, and a friend of mine typed it up for me, sent it into my thesis advisor, and I got my master's degree. And in the review from my professor, the professor wrote, "I've never seen a student's writing improve so much in the course of my career." He said, "It's as though you found your true voice," which I did. And again, I became committed to helping other people find and express theirs. So another friend of mine read my thesis and said, "You know, this is very clear. You've taken this complex subject and made it really accessible." And this friend of mine was also a published author. His name is Peter Russell. He wrote The Brain Book and all sorts of other really interesting stuff. And so Pete sent my thesis to his publisher, and they accepted it. So all of a sudden, my master's thesis was published, and then it got translated into 16 languages, and now it's been in print for 31 years. And the thesis, of course, focused on the Alexander work. And Alexander was a Shakespearean actor from Australia, promising career except for one persistent problem. He had stage fright, and he tended to lose his voice in the middle of performances. And he tried everything. He went to voice coaches and therapists, and nothing worked until he had this aha experience. He realized that there must be something that he was doing with himself that was causing the problem. Now, that the voice coaches and teachers weren't able to tell him what it was, and they didn't have video back then. This was in 1897. So he set up a system of mirrors and practiced speaking and watched what happened in the mirrors. And he noticed as soon as he attempted a difficult passage from Shakespeare, he tended to stiffen his neck, hold his breathing, and contract his whole body. So he said, this must be the problem. It's this contraction that's causing me to lose my voice. So he said, I'll just simply stop doing that. But it turned out it wasn't so easy.
We'll be right back with more with Michael Gelb. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. Let's continue our conversation with Michael Gelb.
It was a very deeply ingrained automatic habit. So he started to experiment with how could he free himself from this habit. And he found that by entering a state of quiet, of stillness, he called it inhibition, inhibiting the tendency towards his habitual pattern, he could free himself from the pattern and access a new pattern, which he referred to as lengthening and widening, being in one's full stature is a nice way to think about it, terms that he also used. So he learned this ability to free himself from the old pattern and access his full stature. And in the process of doing so, not only did his voice problem disappear, but he became famous on the stage for the power of his stage presence and the effortlessness of his vocal usage. A group of doctors who had a theatrical company, this is all in Australia, came to him for lessons, and a few of them got the idea that this might be helpful therapeutically as well. And sure enough, Alexander seemed to be able to help a lot of their patients with all sorts of breathing difficulties and back pain and so on. So in 1904, they helped to sponsor Alexander to sail to London, where he soon became known as the protector of the London theater because he gave lessons to many of the top actors and actresses of the day. He inspired notables like Aldous Huxley. John Dewey said that The Alexander technique is to education as education is to life itself. Dewey wrote the foreword to three of Alexander's books. And Alexander went on teaching until his death in 1955. And I was lucky enough to train with the gentleman who was Alexander's chief assistant for 25 years. And it's, you know, it's in a world that's crowded with these days with all sorts of body-mind disciplines. Alexander is a true original. I mean, an amazing innovator. And in my own work, traveling the world now for over 30 years, doing full-day seminars, sometimes back-to-back in different cities, I've never lost my voice. I always have a sense of ease and enjoyment in the flow of presentation. And I consider the Alexander technique to be my own personal trade secret for being a successful professional presenter.
You're a featured presenter at the conference Improve Your Mind, Body, and Soul at Any Age at the ARE in Virginia Beach from July 13th to the 15th. Could you tell us what your topics will be?
Well, I'm going to do an opening session on brain power, improve your mind as you age. And what I'll do is I'll take people through the simple, practical, research-validated things that anyone can do to actually improve their minds as they get older. So, and the good news about all of these things is they're basically free. I mean, sign up for the conference, come along, and it's not going to cost you much to actually improve your mind for the rest of your life. The only recommendation in my book that requires any financial investment is that I do recommend that certain nutrients and supplements, but I don't sell them and I don't have a financial interest in them. It's just I actually just tell you in the book what the neuroscientists that I interviewed, I went behind just the research papers that they've written to ask them, well, what supplements do you actually take? And the ones that I recommend in the book are the ones that they take and the ones that I take. So that's the only thing that costs any additional investment. So basically, it's what can you do to improve your mind that anybody can do, research validated, prevents dementia, prevents Alzheimer's, because once you get it, we don't know of any way to reverse it. I hope that we'll discover one, but my research, I didn't come across any way to reverse dementia once it kicks in, but there's lots of research on what you can do to prevent it. So that's what people will learn in the first session, and then we're going to go in the rest of the day, I think we're going to go into how to think like Leonardo da Vinci, and that'll be fun. We'll get a true Renaissance day with the great Renaissance master, the uomo universale, that's the Italian word for the universal human. To me, Leonardo represents our human potential. He's the archetype of all our abilities and gifts. So I will take people through the seven principles for thinking like Leonardo, and then we'll look at practical applications in people's lives. And we'll also touch on the genius of Thomas Edison. I wrote a book called Innovate Like Edison, with my co-author was Thomas Edison's great-great-grandniece. And in my research, I discovered that besides inventing the notion of systematic approach to innovation, illuminating the entire planet, inventing recorded sound in the recording industry, and the movies, Edison also consulted at Edgar Cayce.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
I think
Edison was really interested in the future and in future development and technology, and I think he believed that maybe Cayce could give him some insights into some directions for future innovation.
With Leonardo da Vinci, of course, that's one of your books, How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci, Seven Steps to Genius Every Day. And I was reading about your book, and you have what looked like Italian terms, curiosita.
Yes.
Could you tell us about some of those terms that you use in the book?
Sure. Well, it was fun. because one of the people I consulted was a PhD scholar in the Rutgers University language department. They have a really strong Italian department, and I wanted to get the words, I wanted to be sure that they were right in Leonardo's native Italian, because it was clear to me as I immersed myself in the study of Leonardo. I went to the place where he was born. I went to the place where he died. By the way, as we're speaking now, this happens to be the anniversary of Leonardo da Vinci's death. I started to dream about him, and from those dreams, these principles emerged. So I was very clear what the principles were. And what's great is when people read the book, I introduce the principle, and then we go into how is this drawn from Leonardo's life and work. And he pretty much tells you that these are his principles if you pay attention and listen in the right way. So the first one is curiosità, which means, of course, curiosity. And Leonardo was probably the most curious person who ever lived, and his curiosity was focused ultimately on knowing the mind of God. Everything else was just details. The second principle, dimostrazione, of course it translates in English as demonstration, and it's the word that Leonardo used to advise his students how to develop their own intelligence. He said, learn to demonstrate things for yourself. He said, become an independent, original thinker. Now, in Leonardo's time, that wasn't so easy. Leaving aside the strictures of the church of Leonardo's day, information was hard to get. Books were rare, and if you could find one, it would be in Latin, which you wouldn't have learned unless you were a noble. Leonardo actually taught himself Latin when he was 40 years old, so he could read the classics as they became available. Our problem today is we have too much information, but dimostrazione is even more important. How do you cut through the tsunami of spam to think for yourself? The third principle, sensazione, sharpen your senses. So Leonardo felt that our senses were the key to dimostrazione. If you pay attention, if you see what's going on, if you listen, you can more readily penetrate the secrets of the universe. So he was a very keen listener. He had remarkable gifts of observation and vision. He was able to draw details of birds in flight, for example, that weren't confirmed until the invention of modern slow-motion photography.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really uncanny. So he really could penetrate into the phenomena around him through the depths of his sensory acuity. And the other point that I'll make when we're all together in Virginia Beach is also how sensazione is the secret to the joy of life. It's, you know, the Italians have la dolce vita, the sweet, soulful life. And the French even have what they call, you know, joie de vivre, the joy of living. But in the States, all we have is happy hour, so we need some help. And I will bring that help. We'll talk about how the principle of sensazione relates to deepening your enjoyment of life every day.
We'll be right back with more with Michael Gelb. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Michael Gelb.
The fourth principle is sfumato, S-F-U-M-A-T-O, and it's actually a word that art critics coined to refer to the hazy, mysterious quality in Leonardo's paintings, a quality he achieved through the gossamer-thin application of hundreds of layers of paint. And what it represents is maybe the most distinguishing characteristic of highly creative people, which is their ability to embrace the unknown, to smile like the Mona Lisa in the face of change and uncertainty. The fifth principle is arte scienza. Arte, of course, means art. Scienza is Italian for science. Leonardo said, study the science of art and the art of science. So in contemporary terms, we might say, learn to use both sides of your cerebral cortex in harmony. So we'll explore practical ways for doing this. The sixth principle is corporalità. It means balance the body and the mind. And so people often know that Leonardo was an artistic genius. They know he was a scientific genius. But not many people are aware that he was also physically gifted. He was renowned as the strongest man in Florence. He was a great fencer, a horseman, and he gives advice on health and wellness, which stands the test of time. So I will be sharing Leonardo's coaching on developing wellness. And then the seventh principle brings it all together. The seventh principle is connessione, which of course means connections. And this, you know, for Leonardo's ability to make connections that no one had ever made before, is part of why we think of him as such a transcendent genius. And we'll explore his methods for developing connections, for seeing relationships, for being what today we might call a systems thinker. I mean, the classic systems thinking question was posed in 1911 by a meteorologist who asked the question, if a butterfly flaps its wings in Tokyo, does it affect the weather in New York? And modern systems scientists and climatologists tell us that the answer to that question is yes. As Leonardo da Vinci said, everything connects to everything else. Now, 500 years ago, Leonardo wrote that when a tiny bird alights on the smallest branch of a tree, the whole world is affected thus.
Huh.
So he was way ahead of the game. And he saw, for Leonardo, the earth was a living being, which was very unusual in the West. He was more like a Taoist. He had a sense of reverence for nature.
We're about out of time. Could you tell us, what is your website?
My website is michaelgelb.com. That's G-E-L-B, michaelgelb.com. And on the website, there's lots of free articles people can download. There's a bunch of videos they can watch. They can spend a lot of time and have a lot of fun at michaelgelb.com.
All right. Well, this has been a fascinating interview. Thank you for coming on the show today.
My pleasure. Thank you. Grazie mille.
It's time for the Thought for the Day. And today's Thought for the Day will be read by Kimberly Rose. To find out more, go to kimmyrose.com. That's KimmyRose.com. Well, hello.
Hello.
And what's today's Thought for the Day?
Today's Thought for the Day is reading 262:33. Then, when ye abide in his presence, though there may be come the trials of every kind, though the tears may flow from the breaking up of the carnal forces within self, the spirit is made glad. Oh, that to me is just, this is about just that it's like an aha or realize, like sometimes we go through these trials, you know, or they're, you know, the tears may flow, and or you think of a river, you know, sometimes we need to release things and allow them to flow the way they need to be, and our spirit feels free. And I'll tell you, I don't know if you've been doing this a lot in your life, but I've really had to clear and clean thing, like let go, and even people, I never like to let go of anyone, but if I'm not seeing that, if I'm seeing I'm enabling, I have to step away because I don't ever want to disable. It's the same thing with the self. Your spirit's happy because free, it's always free. But it's just, and we keep hearing carnal forces and the earth, and, you know, the hangman is really about heaven on earth, but it's the confusion of how to experience life. and how to experience it here in the now.
Hmm. And this may apply, you're talking about enabling, it might apply to addiction. When someone is going through rock bottom, definitely that's the breaking up of the carnal forces within self, but their spirit is made glad because they're turning a corner. So yeah. There might be periods when, yes, when someone's abiding in God's presence, perhaps it's like a trial by fire. Those parts of them that are carnal are going to be perhaps in misery while their spirit is glad. Or I guess sometimes when you watch a sad movie and you realize, even though I felt bad, there was some message there that made my spirit glad.
Yeah, and it's funny because I was watching 7 Years in Tibet the other day, and I did feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
It was just that good feeling. Or even when you're crying over a loss, sometimes it's not really a loss. There's a freedom, something that sets you free.
Wow. Well, thanks for doing the thought for the day today.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for the show today. Thanks to Michael Gelb for talking to us. Make sure to check out his book, How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci, 7 Steps to Genius Every Day. You can find out more at his website, michaelgelb.com. That's michaelgelb.com. Also, he's the featured presenter at the Improve Your Mind, Body, and Soul at Any Age conference from July 13th to 15th in Virginia Beach. To learn more, go to edgarcasey.org, click on Events, and then click on Conferences. Thanks also to Kimberly Rose for the thought for the day, and most of all to you, the listener. Thanks for listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce.